SMQBs, episode 122, right? 122? Is that where we are,
guys? Yeah, I think that's where we are.
It's been fast and furious lately. Everybody, we are down two tonight, down the Milkman and down Rooster. Pope is back after a little hiatus, right, Pope?
And I'm back, little sandwich. I'll be out next week, but you got me today. I'm ready to go. Fired up.
House is always here. Guys, nowhere to go for House. Hey, who knows what year the first Major League Baseball All-Star game was played?
That's a good one.
I'm hoping you're covering up something in your logo behind you that says what number game this is. Nope, it doesn't say that.
Sometime in the 40s would be my guess.
Not bad, but wrong.
So I would say we are in about somewhere around the 70th edition of the All-Star game.
Okay. So
53.
Yeah, 50.
That was a dumber answer than Pope's, so that's okay.
It went before?
Yeah.
So it was pre-World War II in the 30s.
The first All-Star game was held July 6th, 1933, at Comiskey Park as part of the 1933 World's Fair.
Wow.
And it was such a successful event that they did it every year. In fact, from 1959 to 1962, they played two All-Star games, because what's better than one but two? And they were actually using the money to fund the players' pension fund. And then the greedy owners decided that they would just give more of the money from the All-Star game to the pension fund, so they would just play one game. But they did play two games from 59 to 62. So there you go.
But this is not the 90th, because they had a pause during the war.
Probably right.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. So I don't even know if they even count like which one this is. Or is it just All-Star Game 2023?
I don't know. Somebody will tell you what number it is at some point. But why do you have to ask so many goddamn questions, Pope? I gave you 33. Wasn't that enough?
I have a question for you guys.
Okay.
So a lot of our listeners are going to hear this pod probably tomorrow sitting on the beach somewhere. And when you guys go to the beach, what is your favorite sport to do on the beach? Is it throwing a football, playing wiffle ball? Is it throwing a frisbee? Is it volleyball, the paddleball game? What's your beach sport?
It's a good question.
Lifting six packs.
Okay, well, that was obvious for you.
I have to say my sort of gut reaction from growing up is paddleboard ball.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mine's bocce ball.
We always play
bocce ball.
Yeah, bocce is always fun. You throw that thing as far as you can in the sand, you know, see how far you can get close to it.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think there's nothing better than throwing a football on the beach. I think that is that is relaxation. So maybe our listeners will let us know what they did on the beach this week.
All right. So we are on a holiday night here. We've got the big July 4th tomorrow. So we are going to keep this nice and tidy. And, you know, sports are in that sort of, we're hitting the dog days of summer soon, the All-Star break coming up. We are going to just have baseball, baseball, baseball. But before we hit that part of the summer, let's cover a little NBA free agency. Pope, we're going to start with the West Coast because, you know, you guys gripe on the West about East Coast bias. So we'll let you pick it up. What talk West Coast?
Well, I mean, we
NBA trade.
We got, I don't know how many NBA championships in a row. I mean, you know, we got Denver. We got the Warriors. You know, keep go down the list. I think the biggest. I was listening to Bill Simmons earlier today, and I'm not sure I agree with him, but I think it's fascinating how the Lakers have pulled off the impossible, which is re-signing pretty much their entire team with the limitations that they had going into the offseason. So. You know, they got Austin Reeves, Machiara, and D'Angelo Russell all re-signed. And they added in Cam Reddish, maybe for a little backup. So maybe the Lakers are, you know, you don't expect the Lakers to have the same problem starting like they did last year. So maybe the Lakers are a legit top five, top four team in the West because they were able to maintain their team.
You know, they, the other one that they got, what, which really impressed me, I was also impressed who they were able, all that stuff that they were able to hold on to. They got, you know, the NBA Finals wonder who came out of nowhere, Gabe Vincent from the Heat.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're right.
He's he'll hit the three when it matters. I mean, you know, so and he's got good experience under his belt. You know, the team that's going to be, well, there's a lot of teams next year is going to be a fascinating year across the board, but the Rockets are going to be fun to watch.
Yes.
I mean, Ime Udoka is good. He's got a fun team, and they just brought Van Fleet, who is the highest paid undrafted player now in NBA history at a 3-year, $130 million contract.
Wow.
And I am sure the Toronto's in shock at losing Van Fleet. I'm not sure they all saw that coming, but that's probably the biggest free agent signing in the West right now. I mean, you got Kyrie, who re-signed with my Mavs 3 years for $126 million. Couple things about that contract. One, not a max deal. Could have been 5 years, $226 million. And the Mavs wisely chose to see if they could limit that, because that would have been a huge albatross going forward. It was good for Kyrie because he's got a player option in year three, which ironically not tied to Luka's contract. So their contracts are going to be, if Kyrie selects player option, they'll be up at the same time. So this is kind of a 2-year window really for the Mavs to make a run with Kyrie and Luka. And then what, you know, they had a good draft. You guys talked about that. I was actually surprisingly impressed. You thought Mavericks had a good draft.
They did.
And they added, you know, he's a role player, but he's a key one. They added Seth Curry for his third tour with Dallas. Guy can knock down the three, which is what the Mavericks perimeter sorely needed last year. So, and then how can you not talk about the Suns? Rooster called it on the text string. He said signing of Eric Gordon cements the Suns as the favorite in the West. Not sure about that, but you know, you do add him to the big three with KD, Book and Beal, and they're going to be interesting to watch. But I don't know about their bit players if they have enough just with their stars to do what they want to do. The Grizzlies, they kept Desmond Bane, who's a surprising, you know, not surprising anymore, but he came out of nowhere, and he is one of the true stars up and rising in the NBA. 5-year, $207 million, which is a $41.4 million contract. So clearly the Grizz are going all in with Desmond. And more importantly, potentially, they signed Derrick Rose to a 2-year deal, and they're looking at Derrick Rose also as maybe an influencer leader in the locker room that's going to help with Ja and get him right with Ball. So we'll see. The Warriors re-signed Draymond Green, which was not a surprise. Denver lost Bruce Brown to the Pacers. He was a key role player. And so, you know, from a West standpoint, I would say maybe, you know, the Rockets – and of course the Spurs, because of the way they had the draft. I mean, there's some teams that are coming from below, and the Mavs didn't make the playoffs. They're going to threaten for the bottom tier of that 5 to 8, you know, 9 slots in the West. So free agency not over yet, because obviously we've got some big names out there, because Portland's going to lose probably Dame. I'm sure that, House is going to talk about that, because it looks like he's going to land somewhere in the East. And he's probably the biggest, he along with Harden are the two biggest unsigned free agents. So take it away, House.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, the story of free agency is what's yet to happen, because where Dame and Harden land and what happens surrounding them is going to send shockwaves to the NBA, because it's going to require pieces to move. Like you talk about the Suns, and I think Ayton is moving. I think Ayton is going to be a piece of a move that happens with one of these big moves yet to happen. I think the story, something I reflected upon with the NBA free agency, and why the NBA is working so well right now is because it gives you a chance for your star players to keep watching them and having them stay with your team. It was a big shock that VanVleet left Toronto and why they're so devastated about it. But I think the story of a lot of the free agency is the players that stayed, because the NBA gives the team that has the player under contract a little bit of a leg up. They can give a little bit more to the player to keep them. And if money is the name of the game, the player is going to stay for more money and stay at home where they know, and they know the team, they know the coach. So unless it's a coach issue or something else, they're likely to stay. So I think the big story in the East were some of the players that actually stayed. I mean, we can start with Bison. I was shocked that Kuzma stayed with the Wizards. I mean, he has untapped potential. We've seen it a lot of times in his career, maybe not over a complete full season, but there's flashes of not just good player, but stardom. And where that team is going, he's no longer a super young player. He's not quite a veteran. He's just that right age to bring along some of those young guys without being an old gray head. And I was very impressed. I thought Kuzma was going to move. The Hornets signed LaMelo Ball to a max contract, and the teams to watch, one of the teams to watch up and coming, not maybe for the next couple of years, because I still think it's going to rotate around the Celtics and the Bucks and the Heat, and maybe the Sixers, we'll see. But the Pacers are making moves. I think other than SGA in Oklahoma City, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think one of the best young players in all of the NBA is Tyrese Halliburton. I think he has a chance to be a superstar. They signed him to a max contract. They added Bruce Brown, as Pope said. They added Obi Toppin from the Knicks for a couple second rounders, who's a nice backup. They had the kid that came out of Arizona a couple years ago, Benedict Mathurin, who was a rookie all-star, and they have Buddy Hield. They got and Miles Turner. They've got a lot of pieces. I think the Cavs have been making some interesting moves. They signed two really good 3-point shooters in George Niang from the Sixers and Max Strus from that Heat team. Yep. And I think they've already got a great center, a super guard in Garland. I think the Cavs are going to make some moves forward. Other than that, it was a little quiet. The Knicks signed Dante DiVincenzo. Interesting story there is they now have Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart and Dante DiVincenzo. They certainly will know how to play with one another from that Villanova team. Interestingly, I think on the East, a lot of the moves were made around getting 3-point shooters. That's where the NBA is going. The Sixers, it's going to be interesting. They signed Pat Beverly from the Bulls for 1-year deal. He'll be an irritant. But I think, as Pope said, everything is about where Dame is going. And I think it's likely to be in the East.
No teams in the West are in the mix right now.
I mean, you can never really rule out the Suns and the Clippers because they have pieces to move around.
Well, the Lakers.
The Lakers in Oklahoma City have pieces too. I just think it's like this. What they've been saying is the Heat or the Sixers or the Clippers. And, he wants to go to the Heat. He's made that very clear. He likes Embiid a lot, but when Embiid gave a press conference where he said some interesting things about me and Harden can't do it all, Dame actually tweeted that and just said, huh? Like, how do you kind of quasi throw your teammates under the bus? And so I don't know. Dame can't stop the trade, but the Sixers have pieces they can offer. If Portland's interested in Tobias Harris, if Portland's interested, it's possible the Sixers are saying they will not dangle Tyrese Maxey. But look, Dame's a guy that will change the whole face of the team. Scored 80 points last year. Can turn it on at any time. He's never been surrounded with that much greatness. And if he's surrounded by great players, that team automatically moves into a top two or three. So I agree. Everything's going to surround where does Dame go? Where does Harden go? And does it take three teams at least to do it? you had to be happy with Kuz staying in DC.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we went from, okay, we got rid of Beal. We didn't really get much, but at least we committed to the rebuild and we're going to suck for a couple of years, like really suck, to wait a minute. We could be like a fun team next year. I mean, I don't think we're going to contend for anything. I mean, maybe, you know, the play-in tournament or whatever it is, but Kuzma and Tyus Jones and Poole, I mean, that's kind of fun. And then you throw in some of the shooters like Denny Avija and Corey Kispert, who we have. I mean, I don't know. It could be kind of a fun team and see what they do. And then, you know, Bialy, we'll see what he does. You know, he's like we talked about last week. I mean, he's pretty young and don't expect to see too much from him. It's going to be a fun season. It's actually going to be a fun season. And it won't reflect necessarily in a lot of wins, but it's going to be kind of fun to watch these guys and see, you know, okay, are these three guys who we can really build around? They could have like a homegrown big three, arguably, but it's going to take time to see what they have and how they work together. But yeah, I mean, it's the most fun time to be a Wizards fan since I can remember. And again, I'm not saying that because I think we're going to contend for anything right away, but it at least feels like there's something to be excited about and there's some hope.
Yeah, I mean, I think the NBA next year is going to be fun and it's going to be fascinating to see how all these different new players work in the mix and how it's going to go.
Yeah, I think that the guys to look for that are big names, they're still likely to move. Like I said, DeAndre Ayton, I think, will move.
Yeah,
I think we're going to see probably Zach LaVine move. I think he's going to be a piece of something. And I think we're going to see Tobias Harris. And these are guys, you know, that these are guys that are close to 20 and 10 guys that have been on all-star teams. So in recent years. So I think that's the thing to watch. I think these other big players still being parts of bigger trades or bigger moves.
Yeah. And of course, that's it for the NBA. None of this really matters because, you know, about halfway through the season, they'll start buying players out and moving around, and none of these teams will look like they do right now anyway. So it'll be totally different anyway, right?
So true.
Yeah. All right. Nothing else on NBA. Well, let's talk a little baseball. All-Star Week coming up, right? We're rounding out not really the first half of the season. I think we're past the halfway point, but more or less the halfway part of the season. We've got the Summer Classic coming up. And I think I talked about it. Gosh, I mean, is this our second or third All-Star game going around since we've been doing this?
Yeah,
it might be
number three, maybe.
I think it's three, but you know, we had the All-Star game here in DC a couple of years ago, and it's a fun event. And I like what baseball's doing with it. Just so you guys know, like here's really the schedule of everything. So you've got, I mean, it's really All-Star Week at this point. You've got the, like, when is the, I'm trying to see here where I had the schedule up a minute ago. Here we go. Okay. So Friday you have the inaugural HBCU Swingman Classic.
Mm.
It's an all-star experience highlighting the history and legacy of programs at historically Black colleges and universities. While also providing some 50 HBCU Division I players with opportunity to showcase their talents. So that's something to watch. That's there in Seattle, which is kind of cool. They, you know, they come into the city, they set up all this stuff. You're going to have a celebrity softball game that, speaking of the NBA, Zach LaVine's playing in. Then you have the Futures game. And that's on Saturday also. And the Futures game has gotten to be a lot of fun, particularly for the teams that, you know, that you're expecting to see some big time players come out of your minor league teams. And then
is the Futures game just limited to the minor league players? It's not like rookie players in
MLB.
Okay.
Correct. Correct. It's just minor leaguers. And then on Sunday, the 9th, we have the draft. So, you know, they've really rolled all these things into a big week of baseball while the games are getting played. So Saturday, the 9th is the draft. And then on the 10th, you have the Home Run Derby. And then, of course, on the 11th is the game. And so the home run derby.
I feel like they lined up a lot of big names this year for the home run derby.
Yeah, let me tell you who's playing in the home run derby or hitting. It's going to be Adley Rausman from the Orioles, who's really all-world catcher. Pete Alonso. Randy Arozarena from the Rays. Mookie Betts. So that's a big name to be in it. Vlad Jr. from the Blue Jays.
Wow.
Excuse me.
Big name.
And Julio Rodriguez, J-Rod from the Mariners.
Yeah.
So the hometown favorite. So that right now is the lineup for the home run derby. But those are some big names. I mean,
huge.
You know, you had a little bit of a stretch there where the big guys really didn't jump into it and didn't play or didn't swing the bat. And I've told you guys, I mean, the time in D.C. when Bryce won it was really one of the best sporting events that I've been to. And it came down to like the last two swings as the clock was ticking down. So it was exciting in general. So that's kind of everything that's happening around it. Let's talk about who's going to be playing in it for a second. Here are the lineups. Okay. So let me see here. Hold on. All right. For the American League.
Your Texas Rangers.
Yeah, basically. I mean, who is your catcher? Who's this guy? Jonah Heim,
yeah.
Jonah Heim is the catcher from the Rangers. Yandy Diaz from the Rays. Marcus Semien from the Rangers at second.
That was a big signing.
Josh Jung from the Rangers at third base. Corey Seager, shortstop from the Rangers. Mike Trout, of course. Aaron Judge, who actually won't be playing because of injury. Randy Arozarena. Yeah, he hurt his little toe. Arozarena from the Rays in the outfield. And then Otani is, of course, DH and pitcher. And then those are the starters.
You know who's going to replace Judge?
Well,
who's that?
Adolis Garcia from?
The Rangers?
The Rangers. He was the next closest on the vote.
So then we've got... Are you sure that's going to happen, though? Because that's not necessarily how it works for outfielders.
That's what I've been reading. I mean,
okay. Because we're going to talk about a couple snubs in a second. So then the backups, the reserves in the American League are Bo Bichette, Vlad Jr., Whit Merrifield, Brent Rooker, Jose Ramirez, Adley Rausman, Salvador Perez, Luis Robert, Austin Hayes, Jordan Alvarez, who's also hurt, Adolis Garcia. So I guess he's already on.
He's a reserve. Yeah.
Oh, so you're saying he's going to start.
Yeah, he's going to start.
I got you. Okay. Yennier Cano, Kenley Jansen, Felix Bautista, Emmanuel Clase, Michael Lorenzen, Framber Valdez, Shane McClanahan, Kevin Gausman, Luis Castillo, Gerrit Cole, Nathan Eovaldi, and Sonny Gray. Those are your, that's your full American League team. In the National League, your starters are Sean Murphy from the Braves, a catcher, Freddie Freeman from the Dodgers at first, Luis Arraez. I'm not even saying that right, but it's second base for from the Marlins, who's about, you know, he slipped under 390 now, but he was flirting with 400 for a while. Orlando Arcia from the Braves at short, Acuna from the Braves, Corbin Carroll from the Diamondbacks, the rookie from the Diamondbacks, Mookie Betts from the Dodgers, J.D. Martinez from the Dodgers. The reserves are Elias Diaz from the Rockies, Will Smith from the Dodgers, Ozzy Albies from the Braves, Matt Olson from the Braves, Austin Riley from the Braves, Pete Alonso from the Mets, Dansby Swanson from the Cubs, Braves. Juan Soto from the Padres, Nick Castellanos from the Phillies, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. from the Diamondbacks, Camilo Duvall from the Giants, Devin Williams from the Brewers, Alexi Diaz from the Reds, Josh Hader he's with the Padres.
Great ever.
Zach Gelin from the Diamondbacks, Clayton Kershaw, Dodgers, Marcus Stroman from the Cubs, Justin Steele from the Cubs, Spencer Strider from the Braves, Josiah Gray from your Washington Nationals, Bryce Elder from the Braves, and Mitch Keller from the Pirates.
The Rangers beat the Braves in the All-Star game?
Right. Basically, that's right. Yeah. That's what it feels like. Can we talk about Wander Franco?
Not making milk. The milk
team. Yeah, what's up with that?
Write it down. I mean, Wander Franco will be your MVP per Patrick Milk Michler.
Yeah.
He was that feels like 2 weeks ago.
Snub. That feels like a pretty good snub, though. Because Franco, I think, has like the second highest, maybe the second highest war behind Shohei Ohtani. And he's not even on the team right now. Now, he'll probably get one of the spots on there. I think the other big one is Fernando Tatis, which a lot of people feel like that snub has a lot to do
with just some character issues.
Yeah. And then, and honestly, another guy, and I'm going to be a little homer here, but Lane Thomas from the Nats kind of was a little bit of a snub. I mean, he's having a really great year. I think he's pretty much for outfielders. He's in the top five in all production numbers across all outfielders in any stat you want to look at this year. So he's got a little bit of a gripe too. Also, you could probably say that Goldschmidt from Arizona, he's got a gripe. I mean, he's not having his greatest year ever, but you know, with his career in the past, you sort of would have thought to see him on there. So. I don't know.
Juan Soto have made it?
Yeah.
Juan Soto made it. He shouldn't have made it.
Should he have? I mean,
yes. You guys are looking at like one stat. You're looking at average. He's like fifth in war.
He walks a lot.
He walks a lot. He scores a lot of runs. I mean, his war and his OPS plus, and I mean, every advanced stat he's in the top five on.
Who's having a better year, him or Tatis?
Oh, I think Soto is.
Okay.
I think Craig Kimbrel is a little bit of a snub if I'm being a homer.
Kimbrel? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's been lights out. He hasn't blown a save. He doesn't have the number of saves, but I think Kimbrel is a little bit of a snub. But overall, I thought when I saw the lineups, it wasn't like any gross, gross snub out there. Maybe Tatis. I thought they kind of got it right.
I think so too. I didn't think that there wasn't like a massive snub.
Yeah. So I forget. I think it happened, but Ohtani has both pitched and hit in an All-Star game before.
I think that's right. I think so.
He hadn't started, has he?
As a starting pitcher? I don't think so.
I don't think so. And I don't think he will this year. I mean, he shouldn't probably.
Right. Right. So I don't know. I think they got it right. I think it's fun the way they're doing everything, you know, rolling all these different things into one weekend. I mean, obviously you've always had the Home Run Derby, but they just made it a bigger sort of event now with the draft on Sunday, which, you know, it seems like, and maybe I'm just following it more closely than usual, but it seems like there's been a lot of hype around some of the guys coming out of college this year.
Certainly helped that they were the best players of the College World Series.
Yeah.
I mean, that gave a lot of hype.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, beyond the top five, I mean, I don't even know if I could name the top five. Beyond that, though, you think there's much interest?
I don't know. Maybe not. It seems like people are sort of into, you know, the College World Series was fun. It got a lot more attention than I feel like it has in the past on ESPN and just in the media in general. And so, I don't know. Maybe I'm just paying more attention to it, but I think it's fun. I think it's great what baseball is doing. And it is still it's the best All-Star game experience because you do. Now, granted, interleague play has taken some of this away because, you know, it used to be that you just didn't get to see these pitching hitter matchups. Now you can see them, but still, you know, you still get the best one-on-one matchups from any of the other games, right? I mean, the NBA All-Star game is an offensive, just a track meet. I don't even know what the NFL does anymore. It's like a beach, you know, volleyball tournament at this point. And hockey, because I mean, if a tree falls in the woods and doesn't make a noise, does it make a noise, right? I mean, that's the kind of thing about the NHL All-Star weekend.
Take that, Moose Jaw.
Yeah.
I still think baseball is just like a smidgen away from making it great because there was a time when the players cared about it and they tried really hard to win that game. And maybe it was, you know, one league versus another, but the players aren't really playing that hard to win. They're just having a good time. And I think they draw more viewers if it was like, if it, not that it should count for something. That was a terrible thing when they did that, that the team who won the All-Star game, that league.
Yeah, that was terrible.
That was a terrible idea, hosted the World
Series. But don't you think Pete Alonso, think Pete Alonso wants to take Ohtani deep? I mean, I think when those guys are digging in at the plate, they're trying to, I mean, they want to get a hit off those All-Star pitchers.
Yeah. So I mean, I'll tune in. It should be fun.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. So, all right, anything else on All-Star game? All right, let's just get into it then. Who's got a punch?
I got a punch.
All right, let's hear it. I got one too. I got two, I think, but let's hear it, Pope.
All right, well, I'm going to punch a mouse. Are you planning on punching a mouse?
No.
Okay. Yes. Sorry, boys and girls, but I am going to punch Mickey fucking Mouse right in the mouth.
Oh, yeah.
For Walt Disney's inexcusable conduct this week in pressuring ESPN to slash their announcing corps. And we're going to be deprived of some of the best announcers in the business. And Jeff Van Gundy is probably the one that most people are looking at. He's been with them since 2007. He, Mike Breen, and Mark Jackson have been the troika that have been announcing games in the finals for years. And we've grown very accustomed to hearing. And I really have enjoyed the back and forth between Jackson and Van Gundy. And, you know, Breen's a consummate play-by-play guy. So I'm really going to miss that. And, you know, Van Gundy, 16 years of service to the mouse should have been treated better, I think. But we're also losing some other talent that's we're almost upcoming talent. Jalen Rose, who I really enjoy listening to talk about NBA, especially like during, you know, some of the more controversial things like Ja and the gun culture and things like that. Jalen's been really interesting to listen to. Losing him, or losing LaPhonso Ellis, who is a, in my opinion, one of the best college basketball analysts, whether it's doing you know, the ACC games or just an analysis with a round table. I'm going to miss him too. Sure, he'll land on his feet. He's a true talent. And then Susie Colbert.
I love Susie Colbert.
Who's been with ESPN for years, and one of the faces that I think of, you know, the women announcers for ESPN and analysts and in journalists is also going. And, you know, I don't know what the finances are for the mouse. And, you know, he's certainly under attack, I guess, in Florida for, you know, some of these policies. But that being said, I don't think they should have to slash the ESPN group as much as they did. And I think it's a loss for all of us to not have those guys. There's some others. Chris Chelios for the NHL is getting cut. Neil Everett, who was a very popular Sports Center.
What? Really? Neil Everett's gone?
Neil Everett's gone. Todd Boucher.
Yep. So there's a big punch for you, Disney. You know, ESPN is a treasure. You guys need to treat it as such. You'll lose a lot of sports fans if you continue on this path. Govern yourself accordingly.
That's a great one. You're going to be adding to a punch one day, whether it's a year from now, 2 years from now, because the reason I think this is being done is because ESPN is getting killed by people cutting the cord. And the ESPN basically wants to have its own streaming service. They're already talking about it, so that you would, just like everything else that you would buy, Netflix or HBO Max or whatever, Paramount, you'd get an ESPN package. And if people cut the cord, whatever, every time the cord is cut, that's another cable portion of your bill that doesn't get sent to ESPN. And eventually, when we have to pay for ESPN separately, I want Pope to be able to have that punch too.
Mickey the Dickie.
Well, you know, along with that, and Bison and I were talking about that house where you came on, I'd like to reiterate my punch against Bally's, because Bally's has tied up all these baseball teams in their regional networks, and they're not providing them to the streaming, because I cut the cord. I've got YouTube TV. I cannot watch my beloved Rangers in their run to the pennant this year because Bally's is not on YouTube TV. Bally's is not on Hulu. Bally's is not on any of the streaming services, and they need to fix that. Bally's is in bankruptcy, and yet somehow they're able to still have a monopoly on the regional networks. So there's another punch.
Nice. Cooper, I got two punches. One, he's given Dan Snyder a run for his money, but Max Verstappen again.
Oh, my God.
Max Verstappen, you know, this guy is going to be, I mean, he's going to lock up the world championship, the driver championship, with like 9 races to go, right? I mean, he is just having such an unbelievable season. And his teammate, air quotes, Sergio Perez, has had just kind of a bad run of a little bad luck and a little bad driving lately. And, you know, for Sergio, he's competing to see where he can come in the drivers' championship. And he had this past weekend, Sergio had the fastest lap. There were 2 laps to go in the at the Red Bull Ring, right? The Austrian Grand Prix.
Yep.
And Verstappen, who's 25 seconds ahead of Charles Leclerc, who came in second, he wants the fastest lap point. So he comes in, he gets on the radio and says, "I want to come in for soft tires, for new soft, so I can set the fastest lap." And, you know, the guys, the engineers and Christian Horner are like, "Yeah, probably not the best idea. You're up, you know, 25 seconds, something bad could happen." And he says, "No, I want that point." Now, there's something about competitiveness. I get it. And these guys are great because when they have their foot on your throat, they step down harder. But that one point means a whole lot more to his teammate, Sergio Perez, than it does to him. And it certainly is going to show up, you know, meaning a lot more to Perez at some point, whether he finishes second, third, or fourth in the driver's championship. So Verstappen, for coming in and taking that point just because you could, you get a punch. You definitely get a punch.
What an unnecessary risk. I mean,
yeah,
you know, you got a lug go loose. You got a jack doesn't work. I mean, they were playing with fire, and, you know, it's almost like maybe Red Bull's getting a little too much of itself. I think Christian Horner could have said, "No, Max." I think Christian enjoyed the moment as well. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Although that I have to say, I sort of admire. I mean, they are so good that they didn't even, I mean, he didn't sweat for 1 second that his team was going to let him down if he came in. And you know what? It was a 2.3 second
pit stop. It was amazing.
The fastest of the year for him or something.
It's such a good punch because do you remember earlier in the year when we gave a punch to Giannis for that fake rebound that could get him the triple double?
Yes. Yes. Very similar.
When these guys are greedy to just get that one extra stat, it's annoying. Max doesn't need that point, and especially in a team game. What a jerk.
Max wanted the trifecta. He wanted the sprint. He wanted the Grand Prix, and he wanted the fastest lap. He got every possible point he wanted.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I mean, I get it. They're competitive. They're uber competitive, but God, what a punchable face. And then the other punch I got to throw too here is just for the Red Bull Ring in general. I mean, House, you said it, you know, the during the sprint, I guess during the qualifying, there was like 42 laps deleted because of track limits. And I mean, the track limit penalties were so prevalent that after the race was over, the entire order got shuffled, basically, when they started giving out all the different penalties. I mean, guys dropped, guys, you know, ended up higher, like Lando ended up in fourth because of the number of track limit penalties that were given out. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw, the whole finish was scrambled after the race because of the number of time penalties given out. So first of all, I finally heard an interview today where somebody said that when Michael Massey was the race director, he basically said, you had to keep your one of your tires off the curb. And now the new race director is the one who's saying you got to keep part of it over the white line. And that's one of the reasons we're seeing so many more track limits penalties, is because of that interpretation of the rule. Mm. But I mean, come on. I mean, geez, they're, you know, these guys are the greatest drivers in the world. And it's not just one time over the line, you get a penalty. You get like five times over, and then you get a penalty. And some guys were getting 10 second and 15 second penalties. I mean,
it's true, crazy. But not a guy on the podium exceeded the track limits.
That's
so what
true.
Does that tell you?
Yeah,
I mean, if you're disciplined and you know what the track is, you don't exceed it. That's
how
you
get on the podium. But science, my driver yesterday cost Ferrari some serious contractors points.
Yeah, constructors points. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. He got knocked down from 4 to 6.
Yep. All right. Well, those are my punches. House, do you have a punch? I know you got a lasso.
I don't have a punch.
Let's get a lasso.
Barbecue sauce.
You know, we always give lassos to like people who are like giving money from their salary to like a village in Africa, or visiting a hospital and doing really good things, or coming back from cancer and returning to the mound or something like that. This week, the lasso goes to a guy who's just true to himself and is not going to change who he is and still can do really good. Jason Kelce, the all-star center for the Philadelphia Eagles, has an annual charity that this year is in its third year, and it's been growing by leaps and bounds. It's a celebrity bartender day down the New Jersey shore, in particular Seattle City, and it raises money for the Philadelphia Eagles Autism Foundation. And they do a lot of great stuff for autism and autistic kids through the Autism Foundation. And Jason Kelce went down chugging beers against people, serving jello shots, and basically getting a lot of people plastered to the tune of $380,000.
Wow.
That's a lot. It's a lot of money to be raised for just partying down the shore. So I just thought it was kind of humorous. Listen, for all you guys out there and girls and everybody who wants to do something good, listen, you can still do it while you're partying. That's what Jason Kelce says. So good stuff.
It's a Kelce world. Wow. How about you see what Travis did at the match?
Yeah.
Oh my God. He's like a sandbagger. He was hitting like 250 yard, you know, 3 irons. It's ridiculous.
It's some duo, those two.
And they won what? I mean, they got like 3.5 million meals for kids. So it's not really a lasso, but it's kind of a tag along with his brother. Those guys are doing good.
Yeah. Heart's in the right place.
This doesn't have anything to do, Toby, with perhaps a new addition to the House family, though.
Doesn't no, it? But we rescued a dog last week. She's a 6-month-old Aussie doodle who we were just not going to keep the name Alana. Like, who names a dog Alana, by the way?
Yeah, that's punchable.
Yeah. So I wish we had, as part of the pod, the hour-long car ride of just trying to come up with names that, between five people in a household. It was hilarious.
Oh, God.
And then the heavens opened up. The light shined through from God, and it was very clear what the name had to be for this little girl. What better name than Kelce?
Now,
it's a girl dog.
Otherwise, it would be Jalen.
I have to ask the serious question.
Devontae.
This question, we need this recorded as close to when it happened as possible, because this will still start Thanksgiving fights in the Nace family. Who actually named Kelce? Who came up with it?
The name was nominated by yours truly. I came up with the name Kelce.
What were the other?
The other names were very related to New Orleans, because I went to Tulane. My tool
Embiid.
You know, it was you
Bryce,
know it was a lot. As
Jalen
Gray,
like Devontae,
Devontae,
like Marty, Jaylen. Or Nola, or all these other things. But yes, if we ever get a boy dog, there's a lot of great Philadelphia athletes waiting in the wings for a name.
I don't know. Bryce could have been a female name.
I don't know. Kelce's perfect. Well, she is a perfect dog.
We still have you watch my cousin Justin, our one of our listeners, who will, if he wants to stir up a fight between me and my brothers, he says, "Hey, which one of you guys named Wendy?" Because there's still a very large dispute over who named our second dog when we were growing up.
Who did name Wendy?
I did, obviously.
And who claims that that's not the case?
Everybody else. Everybody else. Literally everybody else in the family. Mom, you know, my dad, when he was around, he did it. My brothers, everybody.
We had a Wendy.
All right.
Corgi.
Who's got a buzzer beater? I've got one. I'm going to go first, but so you guys start thinking about yours. But my buzzer beater is tomorrow's July 4th, and that can only mean one thing.
Oh yeah, hot dog eating contest.
Nathan's
hot dog eating contest.
The world's greatest.
The first contest, according to some, I wasn't there, was in 1916, but. The official record starts
before the
in 19
before the baseball yes, All-Star game.
Before the All-Star game. But the official record is from 1972 at Coney Island. And you know, here's what we've got. Entrants have to be under contract by Major League Eating to participate. Past champions and MLE invitees can get into it. They must eat as many Nathan's hot dogs in buns as they can. Within a 10-minute period, each contestant gets their own scorekeeper who notes the number of hot dogs eaten during the window. Water and other beverages are permitted.
Thank God.
Condiments are allowed, but they're usually not a good strategy. And there's all sorts of penalties that can be issued for messy eating. There are, believe it or not, sudden death eat-offs if there's a tie. The winner gets $10,000. Joey Chestnut, of course.
Nobody's going to beat Joey Chestnut.
No.
He's the top male champion of all time with 15 titles to his name. And he has a world record of eating 73 hot dogs in 10 minutes. He will have his own dedicated feed beginning at 12:35 on July 4th.
Oh, my God.
As he should.
And, of course, Miko Sudo is the top female champion. She has 8 titles to her name.
What happened
to
Black Widow?
She has a world record for eating 6 hot dogs in 1 minute. Hmm. So she gets her own camera feed starting 11 a.m. on ESPN3. And so that's it. This is going to be on ESPN2. Let me see. I think that's it. I want to make sure I'm right about that, actually.
What's the undercard this year?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
They have one.
The women's competition starts on ESPN app at 10:45 Eastern. The men's competition kicked off at noon on ESPN2. And on the app,
we need a competitive eater on this pod. We need a guest to come on and eat a little bit and talk about it.
Somebody with the MLE.
I feel like milk would actually be our best candidate for this.
You mean to actually do an eating contest with him?
Yeah, I mean, look at Joey Chestnut. He's
right.
He doesn't. I think milk's our guy for this. All right, so don't miss it. I'll be recording it because I will be at a baseball game at noon tomorrow. But I will certainly record it and come back.
What are you going to record? You're going to watch them eating a dog one at a time? You're going to watch that on
one? It's not really one at a time.
These guys don't eat one hot dog.
Double
at a time.
In their mouth.
What kind of fucking amateur are you? Jeez.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
The hype man who leads up for Joey Chestnut is epic. You just need to watch that. That's all I'm saying.
Amen. I mean, Joey Chestnut is an American hero. So just watch it, House. Don't mock it. Don't mock
wow.
it. Anybody else? Who else has a buzzer beater?
I got a couple.
Oh, a couple. Okay.
So somebody who was maligned a couple weeks ago for failing to close the door at the U.S. Open, Mr. Orange himself, Rooster even suggested maybe he shouldn't wear orange in the final round.
Did he this week?
Yeah, Ricky Fowler. Came through finally, and I mean, I don't know if you guys watched it or not, but it was a great finish. He had a birdie 18, and he got really lucky. He hit the ball off the tee box in 18 in regulation, hit a tree, and it came into the first cut. So he actually had the ability to get the ball up, and he put it like 3 feet. Great shot to go into a playoff with Morikawa and Adam Hadwin. First hole, those guys were in the middle of the fairway. Ricky hit the ball. It was almost like Mickelson at Wingfoot years ago. He hit it so far right, he hit it off like the stands, but he got an amazing drop, hit the ball to about 12, 13 feet. Hadwin missed a pretty good chance. Morikawa couldn't chip in, and then Fowler drained a 12-footer. And you could just see the relief on his face. It was fun to watch, and it's been fun watching him lately because he's been playing really well, and this probably puts him on the Ryder Cup team, which is what he really, really cares about. Perfect game. This is more for Rooster since he's not on. Domingo Germán with the fourth Yankee perfect game. And as Rooster
up
texted,
for that.
Three times the Yankees have pitched perfect games, and three times they have won the World Series. So Rooster feels like the pattern will be predictable, and the Yankees will win the World Series. We obviously disagree, but first perfect game since 2011. You had what I did six perfect games in like 4 years we had.
Yeah.
And then we go on a huge dry spell and finally get one.
Hope, have you been to a perfect game?
I have not. A bunch of my buddies went and saw Kenny Rogers' perfect game.
House, have you been to a perfect game?
I've been to a no-hitter in the playoffs, but not a perfect game. I saw Halliday do the no-hitter against the Reds in the playoffs.
Got it.
Have you been to any of these perfect games?
Oh, yeah.
Which one?
I was at Randy Johnson's on May 18th.
At Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
Yeah.
The day after my birthday.
Wow.
Big unit. Yep,
that's very cool.
Yep.
And then final quick buzzer beater. Wimbledon started today. The Joker straight sets. What's interesting, though, about Wimbledon is somehow, some way, probably the least favored number one seed, Carlos Alcaraz, is the number one seed because he has still the number one ranking in the ATP. But no one in their right mind thinks he's the favorite to win. The Joker should probably shred his opponents and take home another Wimbledon title.
I got to go back and add a punchable face now. After on our July 4th, evening before July 4th episode, Pope talks tennis. Wimbledon. And well, Wimbledon, didn't we kick those people out of our country so we could not have to worry about them? And you bring up Wimbledon. Unbelievable.
How, speaking of countries that are screwing us, I'm going to talk a little Canadian sports right now. Once the smoke clears.
Oh, boy. Moose jaw.
I think we will be able to look back. I really believe this. I think we'll be able to look back in a few years and say that this draft period that we just finished, the NBA and the NHL brought in two players that really were generational and in some ways transformed the league. I think we've already talked last week about Wembanyama to the Spurs. Connor Bedard, you know, we've had this happen a couple of times when players came up. But this Connor Bedard that Moose told us about when we asked last year, like, who's the one to look out for? He told us that he's truly generational. And the Blackhawks got him. It should transform their organization. So everything's going to be about Connor Bedard. But one thing that I was noticing when I can't think of any sport that comes close to the family ties in the NHL. There were a bunch of kids that were drafted who are the sons of fathers who played earlier in the NHL, like Mike Knuble, who played for the Flyers, and Radek Bonk, who played for the Ottawa Senators. Both their kids were drafted. The son of the coach of the Minnesota Wild was drafted. There was a year a few years ago that 14 sons were drafted of fathers in a single year. I think that's kind of cool.
That's
like
real
when
cool.
You're out there and you know you've played the sport and everything that gets into it, and then raising that kid and going to all those games from the time they were young, watching those kids get drafted was pretty cool. And some of us were watching the draft and texting about it. NHL is pretty unique. They bring the whole team up on stage, and these kids are really, really good, well-spoken, young kids. Like, they're all 18 years old, and they've got these baby face, but they're huge, huge kids. They're hockey players, so it was cool.
So by the third or fourth generation hockey player in a family, Are they born just without like missing certain people? Does he just never come in? Right. So, all right. Anybody else have a buzzer beater? Anything else, guys?
Happy July 4th, everybody.
Happy Independence Day.
Hey, everybody, do something and actually read the Declaration of Independence on July 4th.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay, and he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.